If the transurethral prostate resection is a minor tune-up, a radical prostatectomy is a major repair. In contrast to the resection which chips away obstructing tissue, the radical prostatectomy is the complete removal of the prostate, as well as the pouch-like seminal vesicles behind it. Because both the gland and the vesicles produce the seminal fluid that carries sperm to and through the penis, their removal means that a man who has undergone a radical prostatectomy can no longer father children. Hence, younger men undergoing this procedure should consider freezing their sperm for future use and discuss this option with their physicians. There are three types of radical prostatectomy: retropubic, standard, and laparoscopic. A radical retropubic prostatectomy removes the prostate and surrounding tissue via an abdominal incision. Pelvic lymph nodes may be removed as well. A perineal prostatectomy is less invasive, removing the prostate through an opening between the scrotum and anus. In this case, if lymph nodes are to be removed, that surgery is done through a separate incision in the abdomen. Prostate surgery removes nerve and blood vessels on the back of the prostate and can damage tissues surrounding the prostate area, with the result often being incontinence and impotence. Some men, for reasons that are poorly understood, simply remain potent despite the removal of these nerves and blood vessels that are felt to be very important in erectile function. In an attempt to lessen the risk of post-operative impotence, some surgeons attempt a so-called nerve-sparing surgery. In the nerve-sparing operation, special care is taken to avoid harming the nerves and blood vessels that run through the back side of the prostate. In successful nerve-sparing surgery, urinary incontinence and impotence are less likely to result after prostatectomy. Where this is not used or fails, special nerve grafts have been used in some instances to restore erections or maintain them after radical prostate surgery. So why aren't all procedures the nerve-sparing variety? Because some urologists feel that this lack of complete removal of the prostate increases the chance that some cancer cells will be left behind with those nerves. Who's right? Only time will tell for sure as we follow these men for decades after their nerve-sparing surgery to see if they have a higher rate of recurrence or not. It is a very good idea to discuss with your urologist the options and what his preference for surgery is before surgery is scheduled. Whatever the case in that particular matter, surgery for prostate cancer has undergone significant refinements, and complication rates have been reduced dramatically over the past decade. The 10-year disease-specific survival after prostatectomy rate is more than 90% at this time, with less than 5% of patients developing bothersome urinary incontinence. Moreover, Viagra, sildenafil citrate, has helped patients with regard to postoperative sexual function. The need for blood transfusions has decreased significantly, and hospital stay is usually limited to 2 or 3 days. On the surgical procedure front, laparoscopic radical prostatectomy has gained favour in France, with good early clinical results on patient survival. A subspecialty of urologic surgery, the laparoscopic radical prostatectomy is a difficult operation, but when the technique becomes more widespread and is adopted by American urologists, it may become the treatment of choice for otherwise healthy patients with a localized prostate cancer. After radical prostatectomy, leaking is not uncommon, nor is impotence. The incidence of these two complications of radical prostatectomy varies among surgeons who report their series in the literature of the field. By and large, incontinence ranges from 2 to 30%, depending on the surgeon, and impotence occurs in 10 to 60% of cases, again depending on the surgeon and whether nerve-sparing surgery was possible or attempted. Age, too, is a big factor in impotence following radical prostatectomy. In general, men below 60 years of age who undergo nerve-sparing surgery do better than older men. It is best to wait a year after your radical surgery before you decide that you are indeed incontinent, totally or partially. Although most men will experience some minimal leakage or incontinence following prostate removal, most are dry again within a year. When incontinence is present, there are two basic varieties of the problem: total incontinence, where no control over urine flow or in-between voiding is possible, and stress incontinence, in which you lose a little control only under certain conditions, such as coughing or sneezing. Stress incontinence is much more likely to be temporary, and the first remedy for it is to start doing Kegel exercises. I prefer to call Kegels winks, because to do them you kind of wink a contraction of your pelvic floor muscles. I recommend a series of 20 to 25 winks 3 times per day. It is essential to perform this exercise every day to regain and maintain control of your urinary function after radical surgery. This little exercise has helped many people gain better bladder control and enabled them to control their urinary flow to a reasonable, tolerable level. Still, some may wish to wear a pad for insurance so that they don't stain light-coloured trousers. For others, there is always the old penile clamp which wraps around the penis and urethra and can be used in the totally incontinent patient. For a small number of men, control never will come back, and in such patients, surgery may be necessary to correct the condition. The most common procedure is implantation of what is known as an artificial sphincter, which takes the place of the muscles you used to use to control your urination. In this operation, a urologist surgically implants a cuff around the urethra and places the control valve in your scrotum. The cuff squeezes your urethra closed. To urinate, you simply squeeze the control in your scrotum. When you let the control go, the cuff squeezes shut and there is neither drip nor dribble in most patients. The other alternative, of course, is absorbent undergarments for adults. These are particularly useful when the problem is not severe. You can try a few different brands to see which one is most comfortable and suitable for your problem. Radiation therapy. Radiation therapy uses high-energy rays to stop cancer cells from growing. This treatment can be used in early-stage prostate cancer or after surgery to destroy any cancer cells that might remain after removal of the prostate. Whether cancer remains is determined by the pathologic examination of the specimen removed and careful examination of all the edges of the prostate. Radiation therapy may also be used for pain relief in advanced stages of prostate cancer that have spread to the bone. There are two types of radiation therapy, external beam and internal radiation, or brachytherapy. With external beam radiation, a machine beams X-rays directly at the prostate from outside the body. Today, the technique involves a very accurate procedure called 3D conformal radiation therapy, in which a computer target is used to determine the exact area of the cancer and the configuration of the prostate very precisely, and limit damage to surrounding tissue areas. In brachytherapy, radioactive seeds are implanted into the prostate through an incision in the perineal area. They are placed in a grid fashion in order to equally irradiate all areas of the prostate. Radiation therapy for prostate cancer has changed dramatically in the last 30 years. Radiation therapists have come to the conclusion that radiation doses used in the 1970s and 1980s may have been inadequate for optimal control of prostate cancer. New techniques have focused on improved dose delivery to the prostate with minimal exposure to the surrounding normal tissue. Three-dimensional conformal radiation therapy is the technique of choice at the present time. Side effects of radiation therapy vary from none to fatigue, diarrhea, frequent and uncomfortable urination, and impotence. Impotence is less likely to occur with brachytherapy, but men also experience some rectal pain when this method is used. Hormone therapy. Prostate cancer is fed by testosterone. Removal of the testicles, or orchiectomy, is by far the simplest and most radical way to shut off testosterone production. Most men, however, do not like the idea of giving up their testicles, so hormone therapy is another treatment option for prostate cancer. There are several types of hormone therapy, which seeks to reduce the level of male hormones in the body. Luteinizing hormone release hormone, LHRH, antagonists, for instance, prevent the testicles from producing testosterone. In the past, the female hormone estrogen has been given in the form of DES, diethylstilbestrol, because this hormone also counteracts testosterone. While these treatments prevent production of testosterone in the testicles, some male hormones are still produced by the adrenal glands. In cases where this is a problem, a drug that blocks the effect of any remaining male hormones, an antiandrogen, is administered. Estrogen is one of these, but past studies of estrogen given to men with a history of heart disease has shown it can cause difficulties. Thus, it is not recommended. Other hormones have worked better, and hormone therapy can keep cancer controlled for years. Furthermore, it has been very successful in relieving symptoms and pain in selected patients. Chemotherapy. Chemotherapy, either given intravenously or taken orally, has been used to control pain and growth of cancer of the prostate. Gene therapy. The goal of gene therapy for prostate cancer is to introduce genetic material into the malignant cell in an attempt to bring about either restoration of normal cellular function or, more commonly, tumor cell death. Many clinical trials along various lines of therapy are now in progress. Watch your newspapers for the latest therapy, or ask your urologist if there is anything new along the genome trail.